Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Merle with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. And, this could be a very interesting show this evening, because my switchboard doesn't want to come up. So, last week we had some technical problem because somebody jumped in the, you know, the middle of the show. And I had to deal with that and end the show early. But now, and then somebody's like trying to call in, and this is not happening. So let's see what we're going to do. What I'm going to try to do, hopefully, I don't know whether it's just my thing. I have opera, you know, I don't know if you have internet opera. And so I'm going to go on to Internet Explorer and see if I can bring this up and it'll help. Why does this happen to me? It's miserable weather here in New York. It's supposed to snow tomorrow morning, which is not a good thing because I'm going to California on a press trip early in the morning. I'm going to Santa Clarita and Pasadena, and actually that's supposed to be the first part of my of the show is having somebody from tourism from Pasadena calling in. Let's see, Blog Talk Radio. Okay, let's get this up here and see if this works a little better. And if not, let's see what I got tonight. I also have Scotty Zekretar, Zekretar. Scotty is an executive chef of a restaurant called H2O in Long Island. Yeah, well, I'm in a seafood diet, yeah. I seafood and I eat it. Yeah, it's one of those. And we have him, hopefully, he's going to be talking about seafood, how to buy seafood, little things like that. How to buy it, how to cook it, hopefully, I also have Andrea Markovici, who's an international cabaret performer. So let's see if we can get this up on here to begin our show. This is such unluck. I don't know, does everybody else have such bad luck when it comes to this with Blog Talk Radio? I mean, it seemed all fine. It was all ready to go, you know. And then this happened. Let's go back again to it doesn't want to come up on Opera, even though it came up before. If I log out. Maybe I can log out and log in, or maybe I could, I can't blame the weather. I can't do that. Although, it is, it's supposed to be getting bad. Let's see. All right. While I'm waiting for this, life's a joke anyway, isn't it? I got an email once from somebody about the story. I thought it was kind of funny, and I'll tell that to you. Let's see. It says, We have a fox terrier by the name of, oh, this had to do, I guess, around Thanksgiving, but, you know, it's just the whole thing. Okay, we have a fox terrier by the name of Jasper. He came to us in the summer of 2001 from the Fox Terrier Rescue Pro Adoption Graham. For those of you who are unfamiliar with this type of program, imagine taking in a 10-year-old child about whom you know nothing and committing to doing your best to be a good parent. Like a child, the dog came with his own idiosyncrasies. He would only sleep on the bed, on top of the covers, nuzzled as close to my face as he can get without actually performing a French kiss on me. Whoa. Lest you think this is a bad case of no discipline, I should tell you that Perry and I tried every means to break him of this habit, including locking him in a separate bedroom for several nights. The new door cost over $200. But I digress. 5 weeks ago, we began remodeling our house. Although the cost of the project is downright obnoxious, it was 20 years overdue, and it got me out of cooking Thanksgiving for family, extended family, and a lot of friends that I like more than family most of the time. I was assigned the task of preparing 124 of my famous yeast dinner rolls. Where am I here? Yeah, yeast dinner rolls for the two Thanksgiving feasts, and we did attend. I am still cursing the electrician for getting the new oven hooked up so quickly. It was the only appliance in the whole darn house that worked, thus the assignment. I made the decision to cook the rolls on Wednesday evening to reheat Thursday a.m. Since the kitchen was freshly painted, you can imagine the odor. Hold on a second. Let's see. I might get this in. All right. Okay. I'm sorry. You can imagine the odor. And not wanting the rolls to smell like Sherwin-Williams number 586, I put the rolls on baking sheets and set them in the living room to rise for 5 hours. After 3 hours, Perry and I decided to go out to eat, returning in about an hour. An hour later, the rolls were ready to go in the oven. It was 8:30 p.m. When I went to the living room to retrieve the pans, much to my shock, one whole pan of 12 rolls was empty. I called out to Jasper, and my worst nightmare became a reality. He literally wobbled over to me. He looked like a combination of the Pillsbury Doughboy and the Michelin Tire Man wrapped up in fur. He groaned when he walked. I swear, even his cheeks were bloated. I ran to the phone and called our vet. After a few seconds of uproarious laughter, he told me the dog would probably be okay. However, I needed to give him Pepto-Bismol every 2 hours for the rest of the night. God only knows why I thought a dog would like Pepto-Bismol any more than my kids did when they were sick. Suffice it to say that by the time we went to bed, the dog was black, white, and pink. He was so bloated, we had to lift him onto the bed for the night. We arose at 7:30, as we always do first thing, but put the dog out to relieve himself. Well, the dog was as drunk as a sailor on his first leave. He was running into walls, falling flat on his ass, and most of the time when he was walking, his front half was going one direction. The other half was either dragging the grass or headed 90 degrees in another direction. He couldn't lift his leg to pee, so he would just walk and pee at the same time. When he ran down the small incline in our backyard, he couldn't stop himself and nearly ended up running into the fence. His pupils were dilated, and he was as dizzy as a loon. I endured another few seconds of laughter from the vet, a second call within 12 hours, before explaining that the yeast had fermented in his belly, and he was indeed drunk. He assured me that, not unlike most binges we humans go through, it would wear off after about 4 or 5 hours, and to keep giving him Pepto-Bismol. Afraid to leave him by himself in the house, Perry and I loaded him up and took him with us to my sister's house for the first Thanksgiving meal of the day. My sister lives outside of Muskogee on a ranch, 10 to 15 minutes drive. Rolled firmly secured in the trunk, 124-12, and drunk dog leaning from the back seat onto the console of the car between Perry and I, we took off. Now, I know you probably don't believe that dogs burp, but believe me when I say that after eating a tray of risen unbaked yeast rolls, dogs will burp. These burps were pure old charter. They would have matched or beat any smell in a drunk tank at the police station. But that's not the worst of it. Now he was beginning to fart, and they smelled like baked rolls. God strike me dead if I'm not truth. We endured this for the entire trip to Karen's, thankful she didn't live any farther away than she did. Once Jasper was placed in my sister's garage with the door, with the door locked, we finally sat down to enjoy our first Thanksgiving meal of the day. The dog was the topic of conversation all morning long, and everyone made trips to the garage to witness my drunken dog, each returning with a tale of Jasper's latest endeavor to walk without running into something. Of course, as the old adage goes, what goes in must come out, and Jasper was no exception. I'll tell you the rest in one moment. Let's see if I can get on here again. This is really, I can just imagine this happening. Okay, let's see if I can. People emailing me to come on here. Okay, let's see. Let's see what's going on. I'm logged on here. Let's see if I can get back onto my switchboard. My switchboard has come up. Well, at least my switchboard has come up. Okay, so now I can... Now I can get callers. Isn't that nice? Okay. It says, do you want Nan to hang up? Are you having to? Okay. Let's see. Reply. I'll tell her to call in again. Call in again. Let's see. Let's get this here. C-A-L-L N-A-G-A-I-N. Okay. And let's see if this helps by sending out this email. Okay. And back to this. Now, let's get the switchboard back up here. All right. Now, let me finish this while she's trying to call in again. Okay. So I was saying that, you know, regarding the old adage, what goes in must come out. And Jasper was no exception. Granted, if it had been me that had eaten 12 risen unbaked yeast rolls, you might as well have put a concrete block up my ass. But alas, the dog's digestive system is quite different from yours and mine. I discovered this was a mixed blessing when we prepared to leave Karen's house. Having discovered his packages on the garage floor, we loaded him up in the car so we could hose down the floor. This was another naive decision on our part. The blast of water from the hose hit the poop on the floor and the poop on the floor withstood the blast from the hose. It was like Portland cement beginning to set up and cure. We finally tried to remove it with a shovel. I, obviously no one else was going to offer this service, had to get on my hands and knees with a coarse brush to get the remnants off of the floor. And as if this wasn't degrading enough, the darn dog in his drunken state had walked through the poop and left paw prints all over the garage floor that had to be brushed too. Well, by this time, the dog was sobering up nicely, so we took him home and dropped him off before we left our second Thanksgiving dinner at Perry's sister's house. I'm happy to report that as of today, the dog is back to normal, both in size and temperament. He has had a bath and no longer tricolor. None the worse for wear, I presume. I'm also happy to report that just this evening I found two risen unbaked yeast rolls hidden inside my closet door. It appears he must have come to his senses after eating 10 of them, but decided to hiding two of them for later would not be a bad idea. Now I'm going to research on the computer as to how to clean unbaked dough from the carpet. Well, I'm glad I didn't have to go through this, and I have no idea if this is, obviously, I don't know if this is really true. I don't suppose you're on there, Nan, are you? No. Now we're going to have an evening of people can't call in. I'll tell you, this is not my day. Not my day. Well, what's going on anyway? As I said, I'm going to California. I think this may be a really, really, when I say a short show, I mean, I didn't expect to talk for an hour and a half. I could do comedy routines. I could do my whole three scenes from The Wizard of Oz, except, you know, you wouldn't really get that I'm really doing this. Let's see what happens here. Let's try one more time, and now let's see what's going to happen here. The switchboard. Let's go back again with the switchboard. It says no caller. Isn't this lovely? Okay. Well, let's see. Well, since we're going to have... No, I'm sorry. Since we may or may not have Andrea calling in, I want to play... This is one of her songs on her new CD. Yeah, you are. Let's see if this works.
Don't stamp your foot at me. It's impolite. To stamp your foot at me is not quite right. All I discover is you're not so fine. I fear my lover is a swine. I have eyes for you to give you dirty looks. I have words that do not come from children's books. There's a trick with a knife I'm learning to do. Everything I've got belongs to you. I've a powerful anesthesia in my fist, and the perfect wrist to give your neck a twist. There are hammerlock holes, I've mastered a few, and everything I've got belongs to you. Share for share, share alike. You get struck each time I strike. You for me, me for me. I'll give you plenty of nothing. I'm not yours for better, but for worse. And I've learned to give the well-known witch's curse. I've a terrible tongue, a temper for two, and everything I've got belongs to you. He's a living thing that isn't quite alive. He has brains enough for any child of five. Oh, he isn't too rich in vigor and vim, but everything I've got belongs to him. He's a naughty brat that can't be left alone. He has eyes for every skirt except my own. Even under a tree he grabs for the limb, but everything I've got belongs to him. Something beats in his chest, but it's just a pump at best. I'm for him, he's for him. He gives me plenty of nothing, nothing. When I see that funny face, I know something scared his mother 40 years ago. But I'll never let go. He'll never be free till everything he's got belongs to. Everything he's got belongs to. Everything he's got belongs to me.
Well, that was That was Everything I've Got Belongs to Me. by Andrea Markovici. And, well, let's see, what will I gab about tonight? Oh, I do have, oh, wait, I have a commercial. I have a commercial to read to you. Okay. What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy tale brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calabo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale. At brownies.com. Now, if you haven't had fairy tale brownies, I found these at the annual chocolate show. And believe for a company to have a website of brownies.com, you know, they really, really have to be good. So, let's see. What can I, what can we talk about today? Well, let's see. Maybe I can, but, well, I'm hopefully at somebody calling in later. I have another piece of music, actually, for you to hear. Do you like Josh Groban? I like Josh Groban. And this is one of his that I enjoy. So let's listen to that. Oh, wait a minute. Well, somebody called in. Well, at least I got somebody. Well, I guess, okay. Well, at least I know that the switchboard is actually working. At least that. So let's see. I'm going to play the Josh Groban piece for you before hopefully we can have someone else. Huh.
And I can feel your heart in mine. Your face I've memorized. I idolize just you. I look up to everything you are.
To Josh Groban for hours, but we're not going to do that. Well, let's see. I did get, thank goodness for email. This is the Amgen Tour of California. Okay, it's a Pasadena Rose Bowl, Sunday, February 24th. It says a Health Net Lifestyle Festival. When you're at the finish line, make sure to stop by the free Amgen Tour of California Health Net Lifestyle Festival, running from 12:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. on February 24th, right near the finish line at the Rose Bowl Stadium. The Health Net Lifestyle Festival will feature health and fitness expo. Oh, I'll certainly need that. Cancer awareness education, cycling, vendors selling gear. Oh, yeah. I wish they had, you know, I would rather ride the bikes with the pedals on the foot. I like those. You know, I mean, it's like with a car, you know. I'm, you know, using my feet, and I want to still use my feet. Okay. Then they have family activities. Bike safety information, food, entertainment, informational, and vendor booths, let's see. And they're having something, a fitness challenge kid zone. So this is what's this weekend at the Rose Bowl versus the Toilet Bowl. And let's see, so this is a race. It's the last leg of an 8-day professional cycling road race that will begin in Santa Clarita at 11 a.m. on Sunday, February 24th. The riders are anticipating to arrive at the Rose Bowl for the final stretch at approximately 2:30 and finish close to 3:30 p.m. And let's see. And then going to have an award ceremony that will immediately follow the finish and to be held at the entertainment stage. So there's a lot that's going on, and it says there'll be a shuttle in Old Pasadena and one Colorado will provide a free trolley service to the finish line at the Rose Bowl between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. And it says the shuttle will depart from Holly Street Metro Station to the Rose Bowl every 25 minutes. Parking. So let's see. It's available at the Rose Bowl Stadium parking lots. And let's see what else I have here as to what this tour is. Let's see. This. Okay, here it is. What this is all about. From After completing one of the most challenging and defining stages of the Amgen Tour of California, which includes the brutal Mount Hamilton and Sierra Road climbs, cycling's new generation shined again as a 21-year-old Robert Gesink of Rabobank took the stage win. When did he take this stage win? I guess... I guess this is going on. So I guess what I'm going to is the last leg of this entire race. That's what I got. And so I'm going to be visiting both the Santa Clarita and Pasadena. And let's see. So when I get back, of course, I'll tell you all about it. We'll have some people on to talk about this. And also something that's coming up is they're having in April, they're having Spa Week. Everybody, you can go to spaweek.org. This is something that's going on all over the country in different cities. And these spas are going to be offering either two or three treatments, each treatment for $50. So it'll give you opportunity, let's say, normally if a treatment might be, you know, $100 or something like that, the treatment is $50. So it's not all three or all two for $50. Each one of them is $50. And while I'm going, I'll be staying at the Langham Hotel in Pasadena, where I'm going to get a treatment. I can't even pronounce what it is. It's something with having to do with India. I'll get it though. I'll get it also when I'm there. And they offer this kind of a thing. I'm going to be playing guinea pig all around, getting different treatments with this. Oh yeah, guinea pig is right. When I come back, I'm doing some in Manhattan. One of them, which is going to be, it's going to be an acupuncture treatment to my face to give me a facelift. God only knows I need it. It's been falling. It's been falling. The chins have been falling down. Even more than London Bridge. And so they're going to be sticking needles in my face. I'm going to have to take a picture of this, and somehow I'm going to see if I can put this on the Blog Talk Radio so you could see this, because I can't imagine, you know, myself doing this. And so what I'm doing now, hopefully, I'm waiting, hopefully, for Andrea to be calling in. And let's see. Well, what I'm going to do is, thank goodness for commercials. I'm going to take another commercial break and then play another one of her songs. Which one? Let's say. Oh, okay. Here it is. It's my sponsor.
This program is brought to you by M&S Italian Food Specialist, the official caterers for the crew of Lydia's Family Table, which can be seen on PBS. M&S is located at 34-23 Francis Lewis Boulevard in Bayside, Queens. There, you'll find over 100 different types of cheeses, store-made sausages, fresh meats, as well as great salads and sandwiches. Choose fully cooked items from the deli area, or just tell Joe what you're interested in preparing. M&S carries a full line of imported groceries for all your cooking needs. Call them at 718-353-8318. A family business for over 50 years.
Well, let's see. Yes, we actually would. If you're in New York, I would suggest that you go to M&S if you like Italian food and like and want to buy things and do your own cooking. You can like go to them and say, hey, this is what I want to cook. And they could get you all the wonderful ingredients. I'm going to have another song, Andrea Markovici. What is that? Everything I've got. Here's the other one called Change Partners.
You down.
dance with the same fortunate man. You have danced with him since the music began. Won't you change partners and dance with me? Must you dance quite so close with your lips touching his face? Can't you see I'm longing to be in his place? Won't you change partners and dance with me?
Do I happen to have Andrea?
Yeah, that sounded very familiar.
Yeah.
That was so disconcerting. I thought, who is that? That's kind of a nice singer.
Isn't that great?
I was so surprised.
Yeah,
me.
Yeah, they said I asked them for a couple of your songs so people, you know, can listen to them. My God, Change Partners and Everything I've Got
belongs to you.
Yeah.
You.
So how
that scares the men when I start singing that, you know.
Really? Why?
Yeah. That thing about the knife, you know.
Oh.
There are tricks with a knife I'm learning to do, and I go, phew, like that, and I gesture as if I'm really sending a knife through the audience, and the men go, ah, ah, ooh, okay. And the women go, he's the one. He's the one. It's really fun. Yeah, you got me.
So how long have you been doing cabaret? A year, a long time.
Oh, very long.
Yeah?
Yeah, but it never gets old with me.
Yeah? Where in California right now? Are you cool?
Right now I'm in Studio City, California.
Oh,
so
cool.
So you're talking to a very cold and rainy afternoon in the valley. Right down from where Ms. Britney Spears is causing all the problems.
How far are you from Santa Clarita or Pasadena?
Not very far.
Oh.
You just get on a freeway and off you go, and you get there in about 20 minutes.
Oh, that's where I'm going to be tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Are you flying out?
Yes, I'm flying. No, actually, I thought I'd walk. No, but
actually, yes, of course you're flying out.
Yeah,
what a stupid question.
Well, they're having
question.
A health fest. I thought maybe I should. No,
You're winging.
I'm winging. Yes, I'm going on a press trip. There's a
great
bike. There's some Amgen bike tour going on.
Oh, great, great.
And so that's.
No, it's very close to here.
Oh, okay.
Pasadena.
You're giving me lousy weather. I'm going, oh, I'm thrilled.
No. Crappy. Well, you never know.
Right.
It may break through.
Oh, okay.
It may break.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. Let me getting back to you. Okay. So tell me, tell everybody where you've been performing and, you know.
Well, as a matter of fact, in California, I have a favorite spot where I do all of my workshopping, which is the Gardenia in Hollywood. Now, where I am now and where you're going to be tomorrow is North Hollywood. But in the real Hollywood, where they're going to do the Academy Awards on Sunday,
uh-huh,
is the Gardenia down on Santa Monica at La Brea. And I've been there since 1985.
Wow.
And it is a smallish place, but it's the only one of its kind that's been able to stay in business consistently since 1985. And I open again on March 6th, doing my new show that I'm working on now called Markovici Sings Movies 2, which is the second, sort of the sequel to the one I did all the way, way, way back in 86, 87. It's the first thing I ever did at the Algonquin when I first opened.
Whoa.
And that's the show that had Two for the Road and Too Late Now and some wonderful things. And I'm going to revisit those songs and add to it songs that I've, of course, wanted to do for years and years and years, and that's what I'm rehearsing now. I'm also going off to San Francisco soon to do Coco, which starred Katharine Hepburn.
Oh, wow.
And I'm doing, you know, you had the Encore series on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And Reprise down here in Southern California. Well, in Northern California, it's called 42nd Street Moon, and they do the productions, and I'm doing Coco up there.
cool.
I never am lacking for things to do. I'm working on lyrics
good.
And lyricists because I'm their artistic director.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing a program of what I consider contemporary music, something post-1965. And that is, everyone says, you know, the American Popular Songbook died in 1965, and I'm going to prove that, of course, there have been a lot of standards written since the 60s.
Sure.
That could be considered real standards. Now, it's not just what I think is a good song written by friends of mine. It has to be something like The Way We Were or something that Sondheim wrote or any of the songs that have been written since the 60s that are stuck in your head. And to me, that's something like Leaving on a Jet Plane or certainly The Way We Were, certainly Send in the Clowns. I mean, standards that we have to add to the American Popular Songbook once and for all and say, now, stop saying they didn't write good songs after the 60s.
Oh, sure, yeah.
They did. They wrote a lot of them. And certainly for the movies, they wrote a lot, and certainly for the theater, they wrote a lot. And I believe that the Beatles need to be considered American songwriters.
Well, yeah, it's true.
They may have lived over there, but we have them in our hearts. I mean, if I'm doing a show and I suddenly launch into When I Get Older, Losing My Hair, you know, everybody in the audience knows that song. So
right.
You have to consider it a standard. Or Here, There, and Everywhere, for instance. It's
right.
A standard.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, even something truly like Feeling Groovy, if I sing it, I mean, the audience knows it. That makes it a standard. Certainly Bridge Over Troubled Water. Those are standards. And so all of this is all percolating in my poor brain even as we speak.
Right.
I'm a busy girl.
Oh,
and, of course, the Rodgers and Hart show went very well. The album is selling beautifully on the net. Thank goodness for the Internet. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah. It's fun, yeah.
Yeah, it's not just for getting into trouble.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great thing for publicity and...
Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like you know you've made it when you can Google your name.
Oh, and people tell me. I mean, I was introduced once by Jeff Harner, and he said, I looked Andrea Marcovici up on the Internet, and there were 134,000 references to her. The fact that they're all exactly the same is of no importance whatsoever.
Yeah, right.
You know, I looked myself up at that point, and it scared me.
Okay, I have something interesting to tell you. I was talking to one of my friends, a friend that I like grew up with, like, you know, since like we were like 11 years old, my friend Enid. And I said to her, I said, you know, I'm having Andrea Marcovici on the show. And I said, do you know who she is? And she says, yeah. And I'm waiting for her to say that she listens to your music or stuff like that, but she said that she worked with your mother.
Oh, I love it.
That your mother...
I was afraid that you were going to say she's my best friend, Enid, because my best friend is named Enid.
Is that funny?
And it's not exactly an everyday name,
that's
but my
funny.
Best
that's
friend
funny.
Is Enid Futterman. But she worked with my mother. That is too cute for words. My mother was in buying and selling radio and television time.
And she said that you were set up, I think your mother set you up with Fran Hevold.
As what?
I don't know. You had a date, I guess, that your mother was trying to set you up with somebody.
Is that a boy or a girl?
A guy.
I hope it's a boy.
Yeah. Fran Tevold.
My mother might have gotten desperate at some point. Who knows?
And it's funny. I mean, of things that, you know, like...
Of the things people remember.
That people remember. I mean, you know, like, I have Halfheimers at this point.
Oh,
you know?
That's so cute. Halfheimers.
You know?
I love that.
Well,
I finally got married, and I had a baby, so I just... I mean, I have a 12-year-old girl.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that fabulous?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Are you ever going to be, like, coming to New York, to appear in New York?
Of course. I'm always in New York. I just left.
Oh.
I was there for 9 weeks at the Algonquin for my 21st season.
Wow.
I will be celebrating my 22nd season when I open in the fall, but before that I'll be at Lyrics and Lyricists at the 92nd Street Y. I'll be doing that at the end of May, the final weekend of May and the first couple of days of June. That's the 92nd Street Y.
Okay.
And I'll be directing, and I will be writing that show, and I'll be hosting that show, and I'll be singing with wonderful, wonderful talent, Stacey Sullivan and Francesca Amari, who was one of my students, and Lee Lesak, who is one of the great singers. And it's always a joy to do the 92nd Street Y. New York is my second home. I mean, I was born and raised in New York, and I'm always coming around.
I'll make sure I get to see one of your shows.
But there's you know, so much around the country.
Oh yeah.
There's so much around the country that I do, and the wonderful thing about the internet is that if you just go and you go on www.markovici.com, then it gives a whole schedule of where I'm going, which cities I'm visiting, or if you want to come and study with me, because I'm also a teacher, how to find out where the auditions are for studying with me at Steamboat Springs, Colorado, and all of the rest of the things that I do.
You teach singing, I guess?
Well, I teach cabaret.
I
actually teach what it is that I do,
right,
which is the interpretation of the American popular song, or just theater singing as well, because this is really acting on tone.
Yes.
This is what I believe. You cannot be a singer without being an actor, and I think even just for being an actor, being able to use your voice very well is important too.
Oh yeah, oh for sure. Before I'm a journalist, and before I was a journalist, I was in show business as a comedian, a singer. So, oh I know. Oh, do I know from that?
Oh yeah. I know what it's like to stand up there and get your laughs or not get your laughs on certain evenings.
You know what's interesting is seeing the difference. If when you're a singer, it doesn't matter. I mean, with that, I don't mean you in particular, but it doesn't matter. When you're a singer, the song ends and everybody applauds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you're a comedian,
some nights.
When you're a comedian, if you're not making them laugh, they don't applaud. They don't laugh.
No, I know.
Now, with a singer can steal material. You don't have to sing your own songs. A comedian steals material and like, oh, that person's doing so-and-so's bit.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that interesting?
Well, we have it a little bit in cabaret, though. I have to tell you that. You try not to step on other people's material in cabaret.
Right.
I mean, I'm very honorable about that. If I know that one of my friends in cabaret is singing such and such a song, I'll stay away from it for a few years. I really will.
Right.
I will not just go and glom right onto it. I can't say the same for all of the singers that will think nothing of it, of saying, oh, I just saw Andrea sing that, I love it, I'll take that. I mean, other singers might do it, but I'm very, very respectful, and I try not to. And it's in your best interest not to, because if a critic has just seen somebody major do a song, the last thing you want is to have it in your show.
Right.
You know, but I know what you're saying. As a comedian, they're not necessarily going to know where that joke came from. And that's pretty scary. And I heard about that from a number of comics. I think Richard Lewis is a great friend of mine, and I heard about the way comics are afraid of each other, you know, this kind of thing, this poaching. And I now have long monologues in my show, and I get scared. A lot of my bits are showing up in other people's shows, and it's really disturbing.
Yeah.
I thought, that sounds vaguely familiar.
Because
I love my laughs. I love it.
Yeah, it's fun when you
it's
get
great when you get that resoundingly wonderful warm glow that happens when the audience is really enjoying your they are jokes after a while. I mean, I don't sit down and write them. I improvise at great length, which is what my workshops are about. I improvise for many, many, many days, and then gradually I write something down. But you're right. I mean, a song ends, you could put your arms up in the air, and usually something's going to happen. I know my mother does. My mother sings every Thursday when I'm in New York.
Oh, okay.
And my mom, at 89 years old, is still one of the greatest singers around, and she really knows how to get applause. She just throws those arms up, and boom, boom. I'm not anywhere near as shameless as that. I'm much more sedate, much more calm.
Well, I have to kind of like end this a bit because
thank you.
I'm looking on here and I see I have another problem.
I'm sure you do.
I had a problem in the beginning with this with the show with somebody calling in, so I wasn't sure what was going to happen, whether I have to try to fake an hour and a half by myself or not.
Oh, you would be able to do it from what I'm hearing. You could tap dance for a while.
It's interesting what I could do in terms of comedy. Like I could do Jerry Lewis, the voice of Jerry Lewis, and I did this doing of the Nutty Professor, doing the story of Cinderella in spoonerisms. And that's funny, but I can't do three scenes from The Wizard of Oz. It just won't go over on the
radio.
Well,
and doing Jerry Lewis can hurt you, so you have to be careful. You don't want to do him too much. You might not have a voice the next day.
No, actually, it's not so bad. I like it. I really do. Actually, I do. I like it. Lady, hello, lady.
All right. Well, thanks for the laugh.
Yeah.
And thanks for all the lovely publicity. You're
sure, and I'm glad you gave your website, and then this way I didn't have to ask.
Yeah, right. Well, Markovici, there's only one Markovici in the world, although I think somebody poached in the beginning. Somebody was squatting on my name. Isn't that awful? Oh, well, it's Markovici.com, not AndreaMarkovici.com. So there. They couldn't hurt me too much.
Okay.
All right, there.
Well, it was great speaking with you.
Thank you.
And probably at the end of the show, I'm going to hit the play a little bit again of one of your songs.
Thank you.
And hopefully...
I'll see you somewhere around the quad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for calling in.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was really cool. Here's the thing. It's isn't that funny? Like, as I said, you know, I wasn't sure what's going to happen, but thank goodness I've got everybody calling in. As a matter of fact, I think I got Scotty on the phone, don't I?
Hello?
Hi, Scotty.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay. I guess you were hearing that.
Yes, I heard the interview. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes. So here's what I want to get into. First, let's introduce you and tell the audience who the hell you are.
Well, my name is Scott Secretar, and I'm the executive chef of H2O, which is a seafood restaurant and sushi bar in Smithtown, New York.
Okay, and what we want to talk about is in terms of buying seafood, cooking seafood. And sushi. So let's start with how do you know when you're buying seafood, what do you look for?
Pretty much it shouldn't really smell like anything. Should look, you know, different fish will look different, like different things. White fish will look white, hopefully. Tuna will look red. Salmon will look like a nice orange orange color. And you're gonna wanna, you know, you can ask to smell it. It should be behind a counter on ice. But, you know, you should be able to smell it, and if it smells like anything other than a clean ocean, then you may not want to buy it. But also getting to know the guy behind the counter or girl behind the counter to ask them questions, and they should be able to help you pick something out that you're looking to buy and something that's fresh, hopefully. And also different stores, like my wife and I were in Compare Market a couple weeks ago, and we noticed that the line for the seafood counter there was amazingly long, and you know, a store that has a long line like that will have, obviously, fresher fish because they're selling more of it, so.
Yeah, I went to, I popped into an actual fish market in Queens. It was interesting doing that. I'm going to go back there. I want to do a whole thing with it. I mean, it's a fish market, and it's not fancy at all. Just, you know, and they're probably fish I never even heard of. Or, you know, wouldn't even know how to cook or whatever. But you had a combination of a lot of fish that were, they had, you know, the whole fish. So
okay.
You can choose the whole fish and you can, like, pick out what you want and then, like, you know, put it in a bag and say, here, fillet it or do whatever with it.
Right.
You know. Is there an advantage of buying the whole fish over one that's filleted?
two advantages that I see immediately is, one, you can definitely tell for freshness easier for the whole fish because you can look at the gills and you can look at the eyes and you can press on the flesh. And if the eyes are nice and round and clear and not gray or sunken, or the gills are nice and bright red and don't have any odor other than nice, fresh, clean odor, and the flesh is nice and springy, like you touch it and it springs right back, then you know that that's going to be a fresh fish. And that's one advantage to buying the fish whole. Otherwise, you can also take the bones and the head and make a stock out of it, and you can make it to a sauce or a soup or something like that. So there's a part of the fish that gets thrown away if you just buy the fillets, and then you can get another free meal out of that.
Now, and I was just thinking, like, suppose I've got, small salmon. I forgot what they're called. I mean, it's not a salmon. It's in the salmon family.
Like a trout, a freshwater trout?
Yeah, like a freshwater trout, unless okay. I got another fish. If I had the heads and the bones of different fish,
yeah,
can you make a stock, even
sure,
with a combination?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's fine. Yeah, I like to put I like to mix, like, mussels and fin fish together to make, like, a shellfish slash regular round fish broth, which tastes, you know, it's definitely going to give you more complex flavors, so that's good for a soup.
Okay, so now, what would you, before I get into the fish, so what would you, like, use the stock for other than, soup?
You can reduce the stock itself to make a sauce and just finish with a little bit of salt and maybe some shallots and some butter. And an herb of either thyme or rosemary or parsley, and just reduce that till you get a stronger flavor of the fish, and then add the butter and all the herbs and shallots and season,
so
salt and pepper, and you can put that right over the fish then too.
Okay, so now would you use a stock, let's say you're making, I'm just saying, let's say you're cooking salmon and you want to put something, the sauce over the salmon.
Right.
Would you use the salmon stock, or can you use any other fish stock?
You can make a fish stock and freeze it into pint containers in your freezer, and then pull just one out next time you make a fish, and it doesn't have to be the same kind of fish. Yeah, that it will taste a little bit different than the fish that you're eating that night, but it'll add a nice fish flavor, and it's better than using water. So,
I'm just throwing this in. So, let's just say, would you combine, let's say, a shell fish with a gillfish?
Sure, yeah, that's a great way to, yeah, like if you have some salmon stock in the freezer and you get a trout from the store that day, you can cook the trout and then in a saucepan put some mussels and that frozen stock in there, and that'd be a nice sauce to put right over the trout. So that'd be
right.
Nice, yeah.
But you would you now? I understand, for instance, that you could use like the lobster. The shells,
mm-hmm.
For a stock.
Yeah, that makes a great stock.
Would you use something like the leftover mussel shells or clam shells? No, you wouldn't use that.
They don't really have that much flavor, the clam and the mussel shell themselves.
Right.
When you open up the clam or the mussel in your boiling process, that actually does release a lot of juice. But the if you were to take that out then and just use the shell, that really doesn't have that much flavor, so
it's almost
not worth doing that.
But it's,
shrimp and lobster definitely have a
lobster.
Lot of flavor in the shell, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So let's get back to, again, with buying seafood.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, like, if I go to the supermarket, chances are I'm not going to get a whole fish. Chances are they've already been filleted, they've come in, they're frozen, they come in, you know, and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
How fresh is it when it's coming in frozen like that?
It depends on where it's frozen, really, I'd say. If it's frozen on the boat, like when they catch it in the ocean, they do have flash freezing techniques for Chilean sea bass and larger fish like that. And that I'd say, is, you know, it comes back pretty good when I get it to the restaurant and it's just beginning to thaw and I get it at the restaurant, then I can portion it and it tastes, you know, like it's only a day old, or maybe two. But, you know, when you put it into freezing, it does suspend animation for the most part. I mean, there is obviously, you know, if you keep it in there for a couple of years, it might begin to start tasting aged. But But for at a supermarket, though, you know, if they get like a tilapia frozen, they'll probably sell it to you frozen too, and you can just defrost it in your own refrigerator.
Right.
And it'll still taste pretty fresh. You know, they're really not supposed to sell you anything as fresh, you know, unless it's
it'll never say frozen. You know, thawed.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, and let's say suppose you're buying, let's say if I'm buying shrimp, and it says previously frozen.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Most of the shrimp in the United States is previously frozen. So.
Okay. Can I freeze it afterwards?
No. Actually, the shrimp really isn't something that you can freeze twice. A tilapia, you can probably. So I think it depends on the actual piece of fish, because the shrimp, I have noticed when you refreeze it, it does turn black. So that is one thing that you can, like the stripes that will turn red when you cook them,
right,
will actually turn black again. The whole shrimp will turn black if you refreeze it. So that's not something you want to do. You really just want to cook it and share it with all your neighbors if you have to.
Okay. And now, there's different types of, like, for instance, like salmon, and I'm calling things in the salmon family.
Right.
They all take, like, there's coho.
Mm-hmm. Sockeye, and, yeah.
What's kind of different? Is there a lot of difference in taste between?
Usually it's a size, it's a color, it's a taste. There's a New Zealand king salmon, which we have on our menu, and we also have an organic Atlantic salmon on our menu. The sushi bar uses the Atlantic salmon, and we use the New Zealand king salmon from in the main kitchen to cook with, and it's a smaller fish. It's a bit redder in color. The Atlantic salmon is a little bit pinker, and there is a difference in flavor. Yeah, the New Zealand king salmon, I think, has a more lean flavor and more like salmon-y flavor, as the Atlantic is a little bit more fatty and lighter in color, and then you can taste that it's a little bit more oily in the mouth too, more buttery flavor.
And now, in terms of let's get into a little bit about. I mean, I'll probably get back to this again as far as buying seafood. But
right.
Let's get into cooking. Now, I know I have a problem. It's like, all right, I have a salmon fillet, and okay, what else do I put on it other than dill? It's like I can't, you know, like what are good herbs that will work with fish?
Parsley, thyme, rosemary is good, and you know, all those you can. There's a couple of different ways you can get herbs into the fish too. I mean, basil is good, cilantro I like to use myself too. And you can just chop it and put it right on top of the salmon and bake it in the oven with that on top. Or you can put it into a sauce and like, make a pesto even, you know, as, like, a cold sauce.
Right, okay.
Put that on the plate and then eat it with the salmon like that. You know, many different times to introduce it. You can marinate the salmon, put it in a plastic Ziploc bag with some herbs, and then leave it for a couple of hours, and that will get the flavor in there before you even start cooking it. So
that's really great. What now... let's get to some. See, I find again, like with other. I mean, like I'm okay. Like okay, salmon. Salmon is safe. I see. You know what? I know when I start cooking other fish, and I go, oh, tastes like fish. What are some really interesting fish for people to buy that
try and buy at home? I like. Striped bass is a local favorite of mine, and weakfish too. They're both caught locally, and they're very versatile to white flaky fish. The weakfish has a little bit, also known as sea trout, has a little bit more of like a gray flesh, whereas the striped bass becomes a little bit. The weakfish is also a smaller fish, so it has smaller fillets, so it's very soft. And the striped bass is a larger fish, and it has like a larger flake when you cut into it, and it's a very white and mild fish, both those. And those, you know, I'd both like to just bake in the oven with some like red onion on top, or and some extra virgin olive oil after it comes out of the oven, and a little bit while it's cooking too. But I like to leave the skin on as well. It gives a little bit of crispy texture. Tuna is obviously a favorite of everybody's and widely available. Red snapper is also another one. Mackerel,
How do you know? I heard this, like, sometimes it'll smell. It'll sell as red snapper, and it's really not. How can you tell if it is real red snapper?
I guess just by looking it up on the internet or in an encyclopedia or a fish encyclopedia if you have one. Hopefully, you know, you can trust your purveyor into selling the right fish for what it really is. And it's harder to tell when it's a fillet, obviously. Like a black sea bass fillet and a red snapper fillet do look alike. And, you know, if especially if they're cooked in front of me, I might have a tough time telling the two apart with the skin off, you know, obviously. But, you know, you just have to trust your purveyor, and hopefully they won't tell you something that's not supposed to be what it is, isn't.
Is there any, like, I have to say, any kind of odd fish or uncommon fish that you like to cook or that you use there at the restaurant?
We have a hake, actually, which is a beautiful fish, which is now on our menu because it did so well as a special. It's a it's another white flaky fish, similar to cod. And it's actually a shorter fish than cod, so you don't get as many portions out of it. But it's a little bit, the flesh when it's raw, it's a little bit grayer than cod. So it's not the pristine white that everyone looks for, but once it cooks, it's a really nice white. And it's similar to Chilean sea bass in appearance when it's cooked, but it flakes very nicely. So it's a little bit softer than Chilean sea bass, but the flesh itself, and it just falls apart and melts in your mouth. So I like that one. It's called hake. It's also known as sow hake, S-O-W hake,
right.
And that's from Maine, and I like that one a lot. Let's see, we also have tuna swordfish and Chilean sea bass. Those are our three best sellers on our menu. We had tilapia on our menu for a little while there, and everyone loved it, and they want me to bring it back. That's the usually a 2-pound fish that we would fillet and chop up and deep fry and then use the body as like a serving bowl for the chopped pieces of fish.
Is that why when I was at the place, I saw people holding up signs, bring back the tilapia?
I think that was the Dover sole, and I did listen to them for Valentine's Day. I did have the Dover sole as a question.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, but yeah, so it was a staff favorite and a client favorite. So.
So now let's talk sushi.
Sure.
Doing
it at home or in the restaurant or both?
Well, both. How do you know? Like, how can you know whether to trust a place to have sushi and know that, I mean, you're eating basic, well, let's looking at, and I have to say sashimi,
mm-hmm.
because, like, you know, we know sushi is just whatever it is on top of a piece of rice. That's
correct.
Basically what it is.
Yes.
So sashimi is actually raw fish.
Just the raw fish, right, exactly.
So let's talk eating raw fish.
Okay.
How do you know, how can you trust a place, and what makes it, what makes the fish that they have any different from if you went to the store and bought a piece of fish?
The way they care for it is the way that, you know, is what makes the difference, really, pretty much. And the way to trust the place is, you know, look in the sushi chef's eyes, and you can tell if he's lying or not. But general cleanliness of the whole restaurant pretty much should be a key indicator of what going on, you know, all over the place. So you can tell, you know, if the bathroom's dirty, then their work surfaces may be dirty, and, you know, their sushi might not be as good. So
that's an interesting,
you know,
thing. Is
yeah, just a general cleanliness all over the restaurant will give you an indication of how well people, you know, the management cares about the place. And if the management cares, then they're usually going to make sure that the sushi guys are doing the right thing.
I can just see me now walking into the restaurant now and going, I have a reservation, but wait, can I use your bathroom first?
Not a bad idea.
I changed my mind.
Not a bad idea, yes. You can peek behind most sushi bars, too. They're usually in the dining room, so you can take
right.
a look behind there and see, you know, how clean things are. And you can watch them usually while they're working as well, so you can see, you know, how they're handling their knives and how they're handling their fish. And usually the difference between the store-bought fish and the fish that you're going to get at a sushi bar is, you know, it is, obviously we're paying a higher price per pound for the tuna that we're getting for the sushi bar
right.
Than any supermarket will to sell for their display. So it does start off as a fresher piece of fish and usually a redder piece of tuna. and they'll bring that in and, you know, make sure that we keep it on ice. And when we portion it, wrap it in these, there's these special, like, paper towels that absorb some and absorb some liquid. So we'll put that around it so it doesn't sit in its own juices, and wrap it in plastic wrap, and then put that on ice so that, you know, by the time it's served, it's still fresh and nice. So just taking care of the fish like that. And the salmon is sprinkled with a little bit of salt to draw out some of the moisture, and then it's portioned as well. So there are little things specific to each fish that you do, you know, to ensure that they are as fresh as possible when they're served on the plate.
So now, if I'm doing a takeout with
mm-hmm.
sushi, how long, you know, and suppose, like, oh, you know, I'm going to take it out, but company's not coming over till 3 hours, 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
Yeah, anything like that, I would put it in the fridge. If you're going to wait more than an hour and a half, I would definitely put anything for takeout in the fridge if you're going to serve it, and then maybe bring it out 10 minutes before you will serve it to take the chill out of it a little bit. But if it's just the raw fish, if we're talking sashimi, and if you want to serve that for a cocktail party, yeah, you would definitely leave that in the fridge. You can leave that out the fridge till 10 hours. The sushi itself, the rice tends to get a little bit hard if it's in the fridge for too
right.
long. So you don't want to buy it too early or keep it refrigerated for too long. So
yeah, because it happens that I have a supermarket near me
mm-hmm.
that will actually sell me the fish.
Mm-hmm.
And this way I can go home and slice it up and have my own sashimi, or
right.
if I choose to make my own
sushi.
Rolls. Or,
right.
Which is, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
because I enjoy having, I don't know what it is about the tuna, but, you know, like, you know, years ago, of course, I started, you know, you would have tuna out of a can.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay. And then all of a sudden I had tuna, and it was, you know, grilled tuna. I go, oh, I can never have tuna out of a can again. And then I had raw tuna, and I go,
I can never have cooked tuna again.
I can't have anything. Yes, now
yeah.
I can't have a cook. I don't like if you're going to cook it, you know, like they'll sear it on the outside or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't want it.
Yeah.
Don't either cook the whole thing. Well, because it's a whole different flavor. As soon as you start to cook
yes.
the fish, it tastes like fish.
Yes, it tastes different.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, that's why we have at our restaurant, we have a number one tuna for the sushi bar, so they don't cook that at all. And then we have
right.
number two tuna, which is just as red sometimes in the main kitchen, but as soon as you start to cook it, you want a number two, because there's no use in having a number one anymore, because it does totally change it. Yeah.
Now let's go to some of the things that you cook, and you have some. What's your specialties at the restaurant?
Number one seller is our Chilean sea bass, which is just a simple piece of Chilean sea bass, pan-seared to a nice golden brown, and then it's over sautéed spinach in a potato pancake with a tomato caper sauce. And that's our number one seller by far. In the main kitchen, the number one seller for the sushi bar is they have a spicy tuna and shrimp tempura roll, which is shrimp tempura in the middle, and then the whole roll is topped with spicy tuna and then sliced and put it on the plate like that. So that's a number one seller at the sushi bar. So we also do have some meat, you know, we have lamb chops and filet mignon and chicken, so, but we're predominantly seafood.
Probably
so.
Seafood.
Yeah.
Is now, as opposed to the number one seller, do you have a favorite that you like to cook? Or you it's kind of like, give me one that's on the menu that
okay.
you enjoy cooking and one that you wish you could cook.
There is, the Millennium Lobster is on the menu, and that's a favorite of mine and many others, you know. We've actually done Millennium Crab Legs and Millennium Shrimp also. It's a mixture of garlic powder and onion powder and flour and cornstarch and chili powder and cayenne pepper, and that's dusted on the lobster first, and then it's pan-fried, and then served with mashed potatoes and lemon basil garlic confit sauce, and that's, you know, people love that. And one of the specials that I did a couple of, probably 2 years ago now, is being from Long Island, you know, we love our bagels out here. So we did like an everything crust, which was the dehydrated onion and sesame seeds, poppy seeds, and pretzel salt. And that goes on top of the fish, and then just pan sear and serve with sautéed spinach and like a corn broth. So that was nice.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had your druthers, is there, and it doesn't have to be seafood. if you had, if you could cook something there, if you could, like, oh, I would love to have everybody try this, but it's not on the menu. Is there anything?
I got to say that anything, I do a Wednesday night wine dinner there every Wednesday, and so anything that I really want to cook is up for grabs, you know. So, you know, the owner, Michael Bolson, gives me free rein on that. So any day, you know, any Wednesday, anything that I want to cook. So I really say that everything that I wanted to cook, I have cooked there. short ribs is actually the week before Lent started, week before Ash Wednesday, we did a short rib wine dinner. That was on for Wednesday night, and that is, you know, since we're being a fish house, we normally wouldn't do that, but it was the week before Lent, and I figured it would be 40 days before anyone got any more meat, so we should cook some meat for a wine dinner, and that one did very well. We sold about 60 of those on a night when we did 120 dinners. So
wow.
That was nice, yeah.
Wow. So let's get back to buying fish.
Okay.
I mean, again, you have to be careful. You have to know who the you have to trust the person behind the counter who's selling it to you.
You also have to have some knowledge, you know.
But
you know, if you know what you're talking about, or even slightly, if you ask the right questions, even, you know, they're going to be forced to answer your questions, and they won't. You know, you'll be able to tell if you're lying, hopefully, and you know, they'll know that you know something at least, or at least that you're curious and you care about what you're getting. So,
now, one of the things also, like, I mean, I've come across, like, I went to a place, it was actually out on Long Island, where they had sushi, and it was a buffet. And you can, like, you know, get, you know, all you can stuff down your throat, you know. And what they would do, they would make the sushi and they would put it out, and it was sitting on things, but they weren't sitting on ice.
Okay.
Now, would you trust that?
It depends on how long it's sitting there. I mean, if it's up to, you know, up to an hour, I'd say, for sushi would be okay, you know. Up to 45 minutes to an hour, I'd say. Anything more than that, and the sushi's going to start to get, you know, the wrong temperature, so I probably wouldn't want to eat that myself, you know.
Yeah, because
it's not optimal. Yeah. It's definitely not an optimal situation, you know. In sushi, you want to order it and then have the guy make it for you at that time, you know.
Right.
So that's not an optimal situation, but, you know, it's convenient, a little more convenient than the optimum. So.
Yeah, and then there's some kind of, like, say, buffets that have some sushi on the buffet, and it's not, you know, I don't know. Those are
depends
kind
how
of
busy
things.
It is, too. You know, if it's very busy and they keep refilling the buffet every 10 minutes, then
right.
I wouldn't have a problem with that. But
I mean, I've gone to a restaurant. Actually, there is a restaurant on Long Island. I can't think of the name of it.
They
and
probably
it's,
don't
it's,
want you to say the name anyway.
No. This was
okay.
a good one.
Okay.
It's a restaurant. I think it's in Carl Place. And it's a Japanese, it's a buffet, but it's Japanese, and it's like, it's not one of these places. I hate when you go to these places, like, you know, it says Japanese buffet, and you go there, and there's French fries, you know, or lasagna,
yeah.
You know? But this place, and it's like, you can get all sushi, you can get all kinds of appetizers and salads, you know, it's all that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can watch them, they're constantly making it, so... You know, that type of thing I can trust, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you can tell, you know, and if it's a ghost town and there's nobody in there and there's still food sitting on the buffet and you don't know when it got there, then you might not want to eat there, you know.
Right. So all right, so let's throw in, where's your restaurant?
Exactly. My restaurant is in Smithtown. It's in Long Island, about an hour east of New York City, I'd say. And it's exit 56 north off the LIE, which is 111. You take us to the end. And, we're on 25, though.
On Route 25.
Correct.
And
yeah.
Is there you got a website?
Yes, h2oseafoodgrill.com.
h2oseafoodgrill.com.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what's anything interesting coming up for you that you're doing there or participating in?
Actually, 2 Wednesdays ago, Ash Wednesday was a big day for us. Me and a couple of my sous chefs, we went to. The James Beard House in New York City.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we cooked there, so that was a lot of fun. Everyone was really excited, and, you know, we had a good time.
Tell tell everybody, not everybody knows, what's the James Beard
House? James Beard was a food critic who passed away in 1986, and when he died, his house was turned into a foundation to help advance the culinary scene in New York City and the surrounding area. And so what you do is you go to his house, you get invited to go, and you go to his house and you cook. There's a very, very small, quaint kitchen there, but it's got, you know, nice equipment, and it's an honor to be chosen to go there. And there are about 80 people who go there on any given night to eat like a restaurant. And it's a 5 or 6 course meal, depending on the chef. And it's all paired with wines, and it's no choices, but it's all, you know, it's all one meal, and it's all put out pretty nicely, and it's a lot of fun.
I think I went there one time. It's really nice. It's very cozy.
Yes, cozy.
It's like an in-group kind of like, oh,
yeah.
I got to, you know, and you really get to eat, you know, you're not going to eat the hamburger, that's for sure.
No, definitely not. The dining room is very quaint, yeah, to fit 80 people in what used to be his house. Is, you know, it's a little tight, but it's nice that it's intimate, you know. You get to know your neighbors there.
Yeah.
And they don't always, you know, you don't always eat with people that you know, so that's fun, too, to eat dinner with people that you don't know, so.
Well, yeah, that could be fun, or could not be fun. Well, then again, if you go there and
yeah.
say, well, nobody will know me afterwards, so, you know, I can chew with my mouth open or something like that.
Everyone's there to have a good time.
Are you going to the restaurant show, an international restaurant show?
At the Javits Center?
Javits, yeah.
I think there's one coming to Long Island, too, or that...
Oh, in Long Island, too? Oh, because
yeah,
I know
yeah.
I'm going to this, it's in, I think, March 9th, I think, is the one in Manhattan.
Yeah, I'll probably be going to that one, too, actually.
Oh, are you going to, like, just to go, or...
Yeah, I wouldn't go to do any displays or anything like that. I would just go to learn, so...
Oh, okay, so it's not like I'll pop in on something that you're doing in I mean, haven't...
Not that I know of yet, anyway.
Okay. Yeah, because, I'm looking forward. I've never gone.
Oh, I've been there a couple times, and it's a blast. There's a lot of information, you know, and it's good to go there and eat, to go there on an empty stomach, so...
Yeah, that's the feeling I get, is
yeah.
and try to be a little choosy, because, like, there's so much food.
Yes.
You know, so you can't, like, eat it all. So it's
yes.
just like when you're having a taste, when you get a little taste and you go... You can't go, can they spare it? You know, well, you know, it's like I went to some place where there was a wine tasting, and I would like swish it in my mouth and spit it out, you know, and it was like at least 100.
Wow.
You know, and it was like I had to, you know, do it that way.
Yeah.
But even then, it was by the time I was drunk.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's like, oh, even, you know, that little drop that went down the throat, you know, still affected me.
100 drops will get you drunk, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, it was really cool having you on. You know, we got to go. Is there anything else? Oh, yeah. Is there anything you want to add? You'd like to tell us, or?
Well, I think, just to say that, you know, we should all be, when you're going to buy your fish, just be informed, you know, and make sure that you're, you know, you know what you're looking for, and that you, there's a couple of websites actually I'd like to tell everyone to go to. One is MontereyBayAquarium.com,
yeah.
And there you can go, and it has a good list of different species of fish that are somewhere on the list of that you shouldn't eat, you know, because they're for either overfishing or
That's
you know
great.
Different reasons that you shouldn't eat fish, or you know different types of fish that you want to avoid. And there's also been a lot of talk of mercury these days.
Right.
If you go to FDA website, www.cfsan.fda.gov, you can type in the word mercury, and it'll tell you all you need to know about mercury these days, and to help you make the right decisions. Because I know that it's kind of scary. You know, the New York Times article was a little bit scary, you know.
Oh, sure.
And I think it scared a lot of people. You know, it definitely raised some questions for a lot of people as to what kind of fish they should be eating. So, you know, if you go there, it'll give you complete information, you know, and there is one line in there that kind of struck me that says, you know, let's see if I could find a quote. It says, "For most people, the risk for mercury by eating fish and shellfish is not a healthy concern." You know, it's mostly for young children and pregnant women, so...
Which neither I am, so I don't have to worry about that.
I was young a couple of years ago, but not anymore. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, if you're gonna, you know, a lot of people get scared by these things, so they should just, you know, do their homework. You know.
Right. And don't overdo anything,
food. Yeah, variety.
You know, so you don't have to have fish every day. You know,
mm-hmm.
or anything every single day. And
exactly, yeah. A variety of diet is a good thing to have. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it was great talking to you, Scotty.
You too, Merle.
And, hopefully I'll pop out there again. I mean,
yeah, that'd be great.
That food was really good.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Take care. Have a good evening.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, hope you got your fill of seafood. I'm certainly glad we got Scotty. I'm glad we got everybody on there. And the only person we didn't get was a person from Pasadena, but I still was, thank goodness, able to give you the information on what I'm doing. And, of course, next week I'll talk about it when I get back. Next week, by the way, we're going to be talking about tea, I think. Tea for two or more, actually, about Adagio teas. And we're going to talk about what tea is, the difference between the types of teas and what tisane is. And, I didn't get into the new country. The new country called Igrochromany. That's Igrochromany. See, they pronounce their T's, you know, by smacking their tongues against the tops of the roofs of the mounds, so that's why it's Igrochromany. I can tell you, I haven't gotten information exactly where the country is located, but I got a bit of a description. These people have flat heads, they have round shoulders, they have big noses, but they're, instead of like hooked, you know, if you know, like going, they go up. It's kind of really weird, okay, but this is some of the information that I've gotten so far, and I'll find out, like, why these things are so. But I understand they're not very bright people. But I think because maybe, you know, they're a tiny country, and I don't know how many, you know, books they can read, et cetera. But we'll go into this next week. Okay. So in the meantime, so I am going to be leaving you. I'm going to go take a nap because I got to get up nice and early tomorrow and get onto the plane, go to California. And so I will talk to everybody next week. Be well. Vote often. Hopefully we'll have Hillary because I will be in March doing stuff on Women's History Month. So have a good evening, everybody, to those who are having a good evening or day, wherever you are.
As a dad, you'll probably spend years teaching your son how to hit a baseball, how to throw a tight spiral and hit a receiver, how to spring off a diving board and hit the water, how to hit a one wood and a nine iron. how to hit the bullseye, how to hit the strike zone, hit a jump shot, hit the open man, hit the hockey net, and maybe the most challenging of all, how to hit the books. But the question is this: how much time will you spend teaching him what not to hit? Teach your son early and often that all violence against women is wrong. For tips on what to say, visit endabuse.org. Brought to you by the Family Violence Prevention Fund, the Waite Institute for Violence Prevention, the Ad Council, and this station.